Sand mining has exploded in Wisconsin. According to the Department of Natural Resources, there are now around 160 operations across the state. And over the past few years, local governments have responded to the industry by creating and crafting local ordinances to regulate it. But now Republican legislators have introduced a bill that would greatly change the way local governments regulate and interact with industrial sand mining companies and other industries. It's called Senate Bill 349, or the Regulatory Certainty Act, and we'll talk about it this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'll be joined during the first half hour by Eric Bott. Eric is an environmental policy director for the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, Wisconsin's largest business lobbying group. Eric Bott, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Also joining us throughout the hour will be Rick Stottleman. Rick is executive director for the Wisconsin Towns Association. Rick, thanks so much for taking the time as well.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And at 10:30, we will switch out Eric Bott with, as he has prior engagements, with Rich Buttinger. And Rich is the president of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Mining Association. So, listeners, we want to hear from you. We've got full phone lines right now, and I expect it'll be a busy hour with calls, but do try anyway. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. What do you know about Senate Bill 349? What do you like? What don't you like? Give us a call, 800-228-5615. Also, you can post a question or a comment on our West Side Facebook page, and I will do my best to get it on the air. So with that, the basic idea of Senate Bill 349 is that the locals have kind of gone, they're creating this patchwork. And Eric Bott, I'll start with you. You've testified that this bill would add some much needed certainty to businesses and not just industrial sand mining. What is so uncertain about the ordinances and the current situation that we've got now?
Sure. There's a couple issues we're seeing. You know, any regulatory certainty is very important to any business that's looking to locate or expand in Wisconsin. If they're going to make a multi-million dollar, often in the case of industrial sand mining, tens of millions of dollars worth of investment in a given community, they'll need the certainty that, one, if they abide by all the permit conditions, that they'll get their permit and be able to operate, and two, that once they're legally operating, that they won't be shut down, that the rules of the game won't change at any point in the future, and they could potentially lose that investment. And this hasn't been so much of an issue historically in Wisconsin, but in the last couple of years, along with the boom in growth in this industry, we've seen new things happening at the town level that are very disconcerting, not just to non-metallic mining, but to industry more broadly. And I think that's why you've seen a coalition form around this bill that includes the Cast Metals Association, the road builders. I think six major statewide labor unions now are advocating for this legislation because that's how important regulatory certainty is. And so a couple of the problems that I think this legislation specifically addresses. One, what's the appropriate place for the local regulation of non-metallic mining in Wisconsin? Historically, it was done through zoning, and that's important because there are certain property rights enshrined in zoning in the case law and in the statutes. The way that these mines are being regulated now at the local level is more often through police powers ordinances, where those property rights that are well-defined and protected in statutes simply don't exist. And the case could be that a local government could retroactively, and we've seen this happen nearly a couple of times here already in Wisconsin in the last year, a local government could retroactively apply their police powers ordinance to actually shut down an existing operation. Hmm. And so if you can clearly imagine that the chilling effect that has on investment in Wisconsin, and if such actions were to spread to other industries, the chilling effect that could have on investment in other industries in Wisconsin. Another large issue that we're seeing that's really a recent phenomenon is the adoption of ordinances at the town and county level, particularly at the town level, that essentially create air and water quantity and air and water quality and water quantity permitting programs. Now, that's something very new. The DNR has been, and we believe is, the state's environmental regulator. They are delegated their authority from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and they do a very robust job regulating our air and water quality in Wisconsin. If you can imagine, there are nearly 2,000 towns, cities, villages, and counties in Wisconsin. If each one of them were to adopt a unique and even conflicting set of air and water quality regulations, that's going to create absolute havoc on industry and business in Wisconsin, and we would really be an island in the nation. we're regulating our environmental laws in that way. I guess the third and final problem that we're seeing, and we're seeing this spread really beyond non-metallic mining now, is the application of, I would say, almost abusive local road agreements or severance taxes on the non-metallic mining industry and others in Wisconsin, where in order to be allowed to operate on a public thoroughfare, businesses are being charged rather large severance taxes. It's like a per-tonnage tax or a per-mile tax just to use a public thoroughfare, keeping in mind that these are businesses that pay gas taxes, registration and licensing fees, that pay local property taxes. Now, for years, businesses have agreed, and this is not really an issue, that they should pay for actual damages done to roads during certain times of the year when there's a heavy spring thaw, when operating heavy machinery or trucks on those roads could do undue harm. And that's not an issue. Businesses have been paying local governments for use during those time periods for years. But what we're now seeing are local governments threatening businesses to post to prohibit their use year-round, not on a temporary basis, and targeting individual employers, not even sector-specific, but individual employers with these taxes simply for the right to use a public thoroughfare. And that's an increasingly a concern of ours that we're seeing, really starting with industrial sand in western Wisconsin, but now spreading across the state, and even some of our members, manufacturers, are starting to get into negotiations now with local governments. And so it's a growing concern of ours. So we view this bill as creating regulatory certainty by addressing these three issues, by creating a reasonable framework for the local regulation of non-metallic mining, and then to re-clarify, reaffirm that the DNR is the state's environmental regulator, and that, yes, businesses should pay for actual damages they cause to roads if it's undue, if it's excessive. But that should have some reasonable parameters put around it. It shouldn't be excessive. We should not have it becoming the norm where businesses have to pay excessive taxes in order to just use public roads.
That's a lot to unpack there, and we will get we'll get into some more of the specifics about the roads and about the health regulation or the local health ordinances. Rick Stuttleman, I want to ask you, what about this patchwork? Do you see this happening? I mean, there are a lot of towns that have adopted agreements, but is it a patchwork as WMC and other groups have called it?
Well, we have 1,257 towns in the state of Wisconsin, and there's probably more towns in the western end of the state that have adopted licensing ordinances using their village powers that regulate the non-metallic mining industry, in particular the industrial sand, in the last 2 years. As was indicated in the opening here, this has kind of been an expansion of an industry that wasn't really as prevalent as it was in the last 2 years. So we do have different towns with ordinances. Our association, though, has done quite a bit of training in the last 2 years. We've got over 30 documents available on our website for Wisconsin Towns Association, and we recommend that the ordinances relate more to the operational concerns at the site. I don't disagree with Eric that the state standards, particularly related to air quality, are very difficult for local governments to adopt and enforce. As I've done some research on this, I think only six states in the United States have a silica dust standard that could affect silicosis, or at least that's what's feared by some citizens and neighbors. So having state standards on air quality related to non-metallic mining in particular is not something we would oppose, but the way the bill is written, Senate Bill 349, it would take away all local authority under a licensing ordinance, including regulating some of the operational concerns that are really specific to individual sites. So from the standpoint of having different ordinances, operational ordinances that relate to specific sites, I think is going to be appropriate and necessary because all the sites are going to vary dramatically. I mean, the old sand and gravel pits that we knew of less than 40 acres in the past haven't been a problem, and we have had ordinances regulating some of their aspects, particularly under zoning. But clearly now we've got a whole new phenomena with industrial sand of much larger size. The local ordinance authority has been around for over 100 years. I've done some research on village powers, which is ratified in the Zubelhofer case versus Town of Cooks Valley in February of 2012. And that case has actually just said that local governments, towns actually, with village powers, have the authority to regulate for public health and welfare, and having different ordinances based on different sites is still within that authority, in our opinion.
Now, Eric Bott, I'd like to go back to you, and I read some of the testimony that you gave to the committee hearing down in Madison on Senate Bill 349, and you had mentioned And correct me if I'm in, if I'm getting this wrong, but you had mentioned that Zweilhofer, I'm going to mispronounce it for sure, but the Supreme Court case created a loophole that local governments can now use. Were you meaning the village powers and maybe a new interpretation of what that was under state statute?
Sure. So prior to the Supreme Court's ruling in Zweifelhofer versus the town of Cooks Valley, local land use or siting decisions were traditionally made through zoning framework. In that case, the court ruled specifically on the particular ordinance at hand. It was relatively narrow in that regard, that the police powers ordinance was appropriate in that case to regulate the types of things they were looking to regulate. The court also made a note in its ruling that this is really a gray area of the law and that it would welcome the legislature taking a look at this and creating a clear line as to what's appropriate use of police powers and what's appropriate use for zoning. Mm-hmm. And going to back to what I mentioned earlier, you know, the real core for any investor, any employer that's going to make a significant investment to expand or locate in Wisconsin is something a piece of zoning called legal nonconforming use rights. If you could imagine, you go to locate a factory and it's a little bit out of town in an area that's zoned industrial. But a couple decades later, residential development happens to occur in that area, and the area is rezoned. Now, under zoning, that factory owner, that employer, has legal nonconforming use rights to continue to operate. And this is really key. This is a really fundamental property right if you wish to attract investment. Under police powers ordinances, that notion of property rights is eviscerated. This is a really new area that's been opened up by this case. And so there's really a question as to what happens when a local police powers ordinance would prohibit a mine from operating. And I could give you an example. I mean, I've seen local police powers ordinances regulating the non-metallic mining industry, for instance, regulating an underground mine that's been operating for decades within, you know, 10 or so feet of the water table suddenly being forced prohibited from operating within 100 feet of the water table without really any scientific justification for the prohibition. That would shut them down. And they have essentially no due process rights in that regard and no just compensation for being shut down. So it's a tremendous concern for business. It's why we feel that zoning really is the appropriate place to do local regulation of siting and land use. It's the way it's generally been done in Wisconsin for many, many years, and we would argue that it's the way that it should be done moving forward.
Now, Rick Stottleman, I read in your testimony that some of these agreements, some of these ordinances or permits could be, you know, they're 20 years, they guarantee certain things for 20 years. What's your take on the whole retroactive situation with local village powers?
Well, the idea is, I mean, we've had ordinances now for the last 2 years, and as indicated, we've had over 100 sites that are actually operating. And in many of these, the company has come to the towns where there have been licensing ordinances or even some of the counties and reached agreements. And one of the things that's agreed upon is a long-term license. And I recognize the certainty issue that's raised. It's been raised by business and other issues. But the agreements tend to have some certainty for the local government so that we have some protection for public health and safety. We have some understanding on hours of operation, noise levels, routes of travel, other impacts on the community. And by having an agreement, the town, through its licensing ordinance and then agreement, can basically hold the company accountable for public health and safety at the local level and operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these agreements have typically been for 20 years, 25 years. That's the certainty that Eric is talking about, and it's been bargained for in return for some protections for neighbors. One of the concerns is what's going to be the impact on the water quality and water quantity in the area. A lot of the larger companies have had agreements where they all agree to monitoring of private wells within appropriate distances, not over the whole town, but down gradient. They'll do private testing periodically for water quality. And this is a new phenomenon in the state as far as an industry, and there's still a lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
It was mentioned earlier, Eric said that there's a lot of robust enforcement. I don't disagree that the state has authority over air quality and water quantity, but the state DNR manpower has been very limited. In fact, in the state budget request, they actually asked for 10 additional people. State Joint Finance added two, which is good, but it doesn't get as far as what I think is needed to give the comfort level and assurance to communities that they're there. So by having local agreements, we can require some additional conditions such as monitoring, such as limits on hours of operation and things like that, which have been agreed to. At the same time, the company gained some certainty. One of the issues that Eric mentioned before about severance tax and per-ton mileage kind of things or agreements for highways, we're not recommending severance tax. Local governments only have the authorities they have. But some of the highway agreements are based upon how much usage is going to be. And when one particular user, whether it's a industrial frac sand mine or some other industry or a big trucking company, is going to run 100 or more trucks a day at 80,000 pounds on five axles, our roads in the local areas can't handle that impact. And it's year-round type of impact, too. And so those are the kind of agreements that have actually been developed by agreement to pay for damages and hold the money in reserve so when the road is fixed, the user is actually putting that money in. Now, we recommend a cap on that amount. The money should only be used for the road that's impacted. So there's specific agreements that I think still do what this industry wants in this case, but the way the bill is written, it would apply to everyone.
Well, with that, let's go straight to the phones. We've got some folks that have been waiting for a while to be on the air and with their question or comment. First, we'll go to Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I've seen this bill, and I think that it's really nothing short of a bill written specifically for the sand industry. As far as property rights are concerned, I don't have the right to use my property in a way that affects the quality of the life of the whole community. And this isn't like a little factory. If anyone's ever seen these sand mines and the effects they have not only on the aesthetics of a community, but on removing hills and affecting groundwater, the charge that in Tom Tiffany's article in the Eau Claire paper, he wrote that the DNR has the expertise and the resources to ensure environmental standards are maintained. That is simply not the case. I talked to the DNR. They don't have the methods, the staff, or the ability to regulate these mines.
All right. Thank you for that, Willem. You're kind of breaking up there. I'm not sure if you're on a cordless, but we got the message. And I was going to kind of play off of what Rick had said earlier, and I was going to ask you, Eric. The DNR, in some of my reporting and in the media and other places, they've admitted or they've mentioned that they've got a staffing issue that just for the air program, the DNR in their last budget request said they could use up to 10 people. But they got two, and you've got more mines now than you did when they asked for that. With that in mind, does it not make sense to have the locals try to step in and help out, or is it still an overreach?
When I was listening to Rick's comments a few moments ago, and I found myself agreeing with so much he said, I guess I find myself wishing that more local jurisdictions would listen to what he said as well, because what we're seeing is really, I think a broader problem. It's the application of political pressures instead of science, and we're getting that at the local level. So we're seeing so many of these ordinances adopting monitoring requirements that are excessive and duplicative, requiring a monitoring well one per every 2 acres on a mine site, which is absolutely unjustifiable, and begs the question also, what would the local government without the expertise do with the data that it's collecting? We see regulation of compounds not associated with sand mining, standards set below natural background so that no mine could really actually operate. And that's not surprising, I guess. I think we have a rapidly growing industry here, and it's natural that people are going to have some concerns when you have a rapidly growing industry coming into an area. But that's why we have statewide uniform standards and generally national uniform standards that are health-based and created using sound scientific principles so that the emotional concerns of a locality don't impact a statewide industry. Rich, and, that's where our overall concern comes in. We have national established health-based standards. Those should be applied uniformly on a statewide basis. We can't have a patchwork quilt of duplicative and excessive, even conflicting, thousands of potential local environmental sets of regulations that would make it really, really difficult, if not impossible, to do business in Wisconsin.
Let me ask you, Rick, do you think politics is playing a role in this as far as the ordinances that these locals are creating? And I guess to simplify the question is, have any towns abused the police powers with relation or with regard to this fast and growing, Wisconsin or the industrial sand industry in Wisconsin or others?
Well, there's been all kinds of allegations that there's been towns that have tried to have a severance tax or so much per ton, and Senator Tiffany referred to one town that offered to have a figure for severance tax in a certain decibel level, and that if they agreed to a higher decibel level, there'd be a higher payment. I actually haven't seen the specifics of those ordinances, and I've heard many towns that said, they've been over-exaggerated of what their ordinance says. So I don't think that it's actually as prevalent as what has been alleged by some of the people. Now, again, when we get back to standards, the key here in my mind is there are certain areas like air quality, particularly as it relates to silica dust, where the state should be involved and the state should monitor and enforce. But there's some protections for locals to be able to have some additional monitoring or even have some additional applications of hours of operation. This bill, though, Senate Bill 349, goes well beyond the preemption of nonmetallic mining standards to call all air quality, water quantity. So any other type of ordinances not related to nonmetallic is also going to have a preemption. And there's other types of industries that the state actually hasn't even addressed some of the issues, like spray irrigation of manure is a concern in some areas, air pathogens, and the state hasn't had set standards. There's actually a research study going on. And so Senate Bill 349 is much broader than nonmetallic mining, and particularly when it gets into preemptions.
What about some of the things that are the state delegates to, say, counties for, like, septic systems? Would that possibly be impacted by this bill if it's passed as written?
Well, as written, it says that any local regulation that's based on statute would still be valid. A lot of the enforcement of septage and other kind of water quality standards are the enforcement and procedural permits and requirements required locally using state standards. One of the things about this industry is, and related to other kind of impacts of industries where we've had licensing ordinances, we've had situations where the state has come in and preempted, like in landfills, large farms, and wind turbine sightings. But in that process, we've actually had state standards that then put the maximums that can be put on by local governments, the regulatory limits of what could be imposed. But then the locals still are involved in a permitting process. This bill would preempt even a local permitting process and completely take away local control.
All right, and very quickly, we'll take one final call before our break. The rest of the callers do stay on the line. The number to call in with your questions or comments about Senate Bill 349, or also known as the Regulatory Certainty Act, is 800-228-5615. We're going to take a break in just a bit. We're going to have Rich Buttinger of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association come on. But first, I want to take this last call for the first half hour. Chimney Rock, we're going to. And Tim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Well, I sure hope you give me more than 15 seconds. I have more to say than I can squeeze into the time before the break. First, I'd like to commend Mr. Stadelman and the WTA for their swift, decisive response to this threat and also for their co-sponsorship of the Powers Report. I'd also like to say that SB 349 is a blatant attempt by a powerful special interest group to take control away from township governments and to concentrate that control at the state level. Township government is the only layer of government that is truly and immediately responsive to the concerns of its residents and property owners. Mr. Bott has repeatedly talked about investors. It is not the purpose of state government to make life easy for investors. Township regulations exist and are spreading in the last 2 years precisely because so many rural residents will not tolerate the destruction of their neighborhoods for strip mining. We refuse to see our homes and land sacrificed to improve the bottom lines of giant energy corporations. And lastly, the Walker administration has, and again in contrast to what Mr. Bott has said, the Walker administration has emasculated the DNR. They have hamstrung county governments. I think this legislation should be called Gut Shoot the Townships, because that's really what it does.
All right.
I commend the WTA for opposing this legislation, and I wholeheartedly support our local political leaders, Senator Vinehout and Representative Dan Dano, as they oppose the bill.
Tim, thank you so much for the call. And with that, we are going to take our first break. Eric Bott has joined us for the first half hour. Eric Bott is the Environmental Policy Director for the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce in Madison, and he's joined us by phone. Thank you so much for participating for this half of the program, Eric.
Thanks, Rich.
Take care. And with that, a reminder to listeners, you can call in with your questions or comments. We're talking about Senate Bill 349, the Regulatory Certainty Act, and how it may impact industrial sand mining and the relationship with local governments, also other industries. It's not just sand mining that could be impacted here. The number, 800-228-5615. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. We're talking this hour about something called the Regulatory Certainty Act. It's a bill that was introduced by State Senator Tom Tiffany and State Representative Joan Balwig, as many co-sponsors as well. And it seeks to change the interplay between local government and industrial non-metallic mining, also other industries as well. It's not just specific to this one industry, but that definitely has the spotlight and has a lot of people talking about it. So we want to hear what you think. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. We've got two lines wide open right now. What do you think of the attempt that the state is undertaking to kind of standardize things? Some people say it's standardizing. Some people say it's taking away local control. Let us know what you think. 800-228-5615. Now, joining me on the West Side is Rich Buttinger, and Rich is the president of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. He also works with Fairmont Minerals, which has the plant in Menominee, and I believe another one in Maiden Rock.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's correct. Thanks so much for joining us, Rich.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also still joining us on the phone is Rick Stuttleman. He is the executive director for the Wisconsin Towns Association. So with that, we'll go to you, Rich. I want to hear from someone that works with the industry and surely talks with other companies. How have these local police powers, how have they been problematic specifically to your industry?
Well, the first thing that becomes a problem is that they create a regulatory uncertainty, a patchwork across the state. And I guess the best example of that is, non-metallic mining, and where I come from is industrial sand, which is part of non-metallic mining.
Mm-hmm.
Has a tremendous history within the state. It's very strictly regulated, both from the local level through zoning authority, and the state level through Department of Natural Resources and a few other organizations. There's also a tremendous amount of federal regulations that apply to our industry. Non-metallic mining and industrial sand mining. So when it comes to local patchwork, as rules are changing and have been changing through the police power ordinances, it becomes very difficult to know exactly what the rules are in these local areas, and becomes problematic as far as how do we follow these rules that are popping up. It's very inconsistent, and it's been a challenge for our members and an industry as a whole. You heard Eric Bott explain many different problems that all other industries are having. It's not just about non-metallic mining either.
Right. But specifically, since you represent the industry, there are, more than 100 facilities that have been given permits and that may be already operating. Are there any examples of companies being shut down totally and not being able to get permits?
Well, I'm not sure about companies that have actually been shut down. I don't think that has been the case. But I can give you examples of companies who have been prohibited to developing property for non-metallic, a new site,
mm-hmm.
Within townships that have adopted these ordinances. And I could give you examples of existing operations that have had to gain an exemption, a specific exemption from these police powers to be able to continue to operate within the local areas according to the police powers. And so if it wasn't for that exemption being given specifically to that company and to that operation, I believe that what you had said as far as actual operations being shut down would have occurred and would be occurring.
And do you agree with Eric Bott's statement? I'm just curious that a lot of these ordinances that may be more restrictive than others, that it's political or based or based on a majority of the local town or whatever government just being opposed to sand mining in general?
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. But again, the patchwork for these regulations is probably similar to the patchwork of what's motivating these ordinances. I'm sure there are probably the extremes where it is very political. And I think there's probably some examples where it has been applied responsibly from a township. But there again, that's one of the problems that we're seeing within across the state, is that there is uncertainty, mm-hmm. both from the motivation of why these police powers are being adopted, and also, you know, uncertainty from the actual police powers themselves. What's included, and what an industry has to do to be able to comply with these regulations.
Rick Settleman, I want to go back to you, and this is actually kind of a throwback to something that I asked Eric Bott, but I'm wondering, you know, the WMC seems to have suggested in its testimony that this Town of Cooks Valley Supreme Court decision is strictly only relating to them, and that it doesn't necessarily relate to other companies, that these police powers can be used to in this specific industry. Any response to that?
Well, village powers is authority that the town electors give to the town board to exercise regulatory authority for protection of public health and welfare. And I've done some legal research on village powers, and it's been in the state statute since as early as 1905. We've used it in other regulatory settings as things come up. I've used a couple of them, I mentioned them before, but landfills was an area where when we closed a lot of town dumps in the 1980s, mm-hmm. and we ended up going to engineered sites, and people didn't want to have the impacts of large landfills next to them. They started adopting licensing ordinances. It resulted in a state preemption in part and the creation of a statewide negotiation arbitration process, but there was still authority for local ordinances with a state resolution of those disputes. Large farms, 6-8 years ago, we started seeing ordinances that tried to regulate large farms, some of which may have been more restrictive than what the industry and the farming wanted, and we ended up with a livestock siting law which sets state standards for, like, air quality, water quality, nutrient management, 5 different areas, but the locals still retained local permitting authority. So village powers is one of the regulatory authorities that has been used. Wind turbine siting, about 5-6 years ago, we had ordinances that were restricting distances that wind turbines could be next to homes, and some of the ordinances at both the town and county level were setting standards which the industry argued were arbitrary and capricious, and as a result, the legislature gave PSC authority to set maximum setbacks. In that area, though, we still retain the authority for local ordinances using village powers to protect for public health and safety. Senate Bill 349 takes away all regulatory authority for non-metallic mining and then sets state standards not just in air quality and water quantity for non-metallic, but also in any other industry activities.
Mm-hmm. With that, I hate to jump around, but I'd like to go back to the phones now, and let's hear from Dan. Steve in Danbury, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I was town board chair here in Oakland Township for 6 years in Burnett County, so I'm responding, I guess, from that perspective. And I think Mr. Stadelman has given an excellent outline of village powers, and I won't attempt to go back over that. I think he's very eloquently stated the case for retaining those powers. And I think the previous caller made a lot of good points, too, that I wish would have been addressed right before the break. But all I would say is I thought the Republicans were about local control, but what we're seeing here really is an attempt to usurp all the local control and put all power in the hands of the Walker administration. And the kind of favoritism towards corporation at the expense of local interests. And I think what's happened with frac sand mining is the technology has outpaced our ability to regulate it, contrary to what your current guest is saying. I'd like to know what the tightly controlled industry is at the local level, as he asserted earlier. I think that's total bunk. So, at any rate, I followed this Tiffany fellow throughout the last year here, and he's introduced a lot of legislation that favors corporate interests. So I'm not surprised that he's behind this one. And I think, again, it's just another attempt to usurp local control and the ability of local citizens to have some control over their environment at the expense, in favor of state control.
All right. Steve, thanks so much for giving a call. A reminder, the phone lines are filling up quick, but we can get you on the air if you've got some patience and if we've got enough time in the hour. The number to call in with your question or comment is 800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. Rich Buttinger, what about, you know, the locals wouldn't have the ability to monitor or regulate so much as they did before. What are some of the other regulations that the industry faces? I mean, we've heard a lot about the DNR has 11 different things and the federal, and that it's such a regulated industry. But folks at the local level might not be able to see that as much as someone in the industry.
Well, and I think that may be one of the big issues here is that, you know, people who live in these areas where mines are being developed or proposed to be developed don't quite understand that it is very strictly regulated within the state. And it's also strictly regulated through zoning authority, which is what this bill outlines as far as the regulatory certainty. It reaffirms the authority for local control being with the zoning authority. And zoning authority could be a wide range, and I'm sure include many of the conditions that are also redundant within the police powers. We're seeing a lot of overlaps, not only just from local zoning with the police powers, but also from the state and federal level. So, you know, a lot of the concerns and sections that are within police power ordinances are also within state and other regulatory agencies. You know, the problem lies with the fact that a lot of these ordinances include regulations that are not based on science and fact, and it becomes very problematic for an industry to follow those rules and regulations. You know, there's a patchwork across the state, but also, you know, it's very difficult to understand the regulations and actually how to follow them. So in many cases, these ordinances become prohibitive to particular land use, and non-metallic mining is what we're talking about with this police powers ordinance. You know, the strict regulations that have been occurring, this is nothing new to the state of Wisconsin. Industrial sand has been a large part of the state's economy. Non-metallic mining has been a large part of the state's economy for over 100 years. It's just been recently with the growth of the oil and gas industry and frac sand being one of the many markets of industrial sand that has really grown and been responsible for this great opportunity for growth within Wisconsin. But like any opportunity, great opportunity comes great responsibility. Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association believes very strongly and working with our local governments and state regulators to make sure that we continue to take advantage of this opportunity, this growth opportunity, and do it responsibly.
And I got a question. I want to follow up on that. The zoning, that towns that are zoned, excuse me, they would not be affected by this. And Trempealeau County has more mines than any other county in the state, and they have a countywide zoning ordinance, and under that they've got, you know, the different permits that they have to get, and they're pretty restrictive actually on air and whatnot. Is that an ideal system? Is that kind of what we're trying to get towards, or your industry is trying to get towards with 349?
Yeah, I believe so. The zoning authority, there's history there, there's accountability there, there's law there. That's specifically stated for land use. It ties back to comprehensive planning that may be happening or have happened in the past, and it is constantly updated as far as the vision of that township and that county for land use. So, you know, the zoning authority, is the local authority that regulates land use, and some zoning authorities could not see non-metallic mining fitting in a certain area, and that's why, you know, it could be zoned agricultural or industrial, something that would not qualify non-metallic mining to be used. Well, there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. Comprehensive planning, the future vision of that property use, and that's very well respected within all industries, as far as the zoning authority is concerned.
Rich, can I jump in here on that issue?
Yeah, please. Let me follow up with that first, though, because there's been there's a third operation right now in Trempealeau County that is seeking to annex to cities to avoid county zoning regulations. Is that because the regulations are too burdensome, or is it just a company How do you explain that?
Yeah, I can't explain it. I think it's probably very site-specific on those situations.
Sure.
And the reasons for a particular company to annex in or out of a township or a village or a city, you know, are site-specific. So, and I'm not familiar with the reasons.
All right. Rick, go ahead.
Well, the zoning authority is the strongest land use authority. I don't disagree with Rich. We've always said that that's the strongest land use authority. One of the weaknesses with zoning is that, first of all, zoning ordinances typically had non-metallic mining as a conditional use, maybe in an agricultural zone. Typically, it wasn't a conditional use in residential because that would not be consistent with residential. But I don't think we've kept up with ordinances, zoning ordinances, on the nature of the industrial sand. Large facilities, major impacts on trucking and those type of things. And so part of the reason why you're seeing licensing ordinances, because they can be adopted in a much more abbreviated process. There's actually some models out there that I think, you know, can be used right away to start with. We've had a sample out there for now 2 years, which we think is a reasonable ordinance for a licensing ordinance. The other issue with zoning is there's 240 towns in the state that do not have town or county zoning. And there are towns of that group that don't necessarily want to adopt zoning because zoning is going to have to apply to all land uses. They just can't pick out one industry. So there's some ideas, you know, concern about having zoning in general. And then in addition, there's 750 towns that are under county zoning. Now, some of the counties has done an excellent job. They've been very detailed. You mentioned Trempealeau County, which has really gotten into detail. But the towns don't have the control then because it's going to be a county ordinance that's going to be enforced. Some of the counties haven't been as aggressive, and they don't take into concern some of the immediate neighbors. So over nearly 1,000 towns are losing one of their options to protect themselves through licensing. This annexation case is a good example where I've been told that it's a balloon annexation where the particular mine site is a mile and a half to 2 miles away from the city or village, and they're going to annex it on a string of a strip along a highway or a railroad right away. And by annexing it, it'll be in the city or village and subject to the city or village rules because county zoning does not apply in cities and villages, only in towns. As a result, that particular site is going to get out from under the county zoning. But because it's a balloon on a string, the site is actually going to be totally surrounded by town residents, and the only regulation is going to be the city or village. Now, the city or village being over a mile and a half or 2 miles away is the heart of it, doesn't really concern about hours of operation, other kind of impacts that that site has. And so the city or village doesn't want to regulate to the detail that the county ordinance is. So this balloon annexation comes a way of getting out from under the zoning ordinance that the county has and leaving the neighbors who are all in the towns without any recourse.
With that, let's take our final break here on the west side, and we'll come back. We'll hear more from Rick Stottleman and Rich Buttinger. Also, we've got a couple of calls, but we are getting close to the top of the hour, and we got some bills to pay. So stay tuned. This is the west side. We're talking about Senate Bill 349, also known as the Regulatory Certainty Act, and how it impacts industrial sand mining and other industries in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about Senate Bill 349, also known as the Regulatory Certainty Act. It seeks to standardize the way that business and government interacts insofar as instead of allowing local governments to create ordinances on specific industries, it regulates this. It tries to take it away and take away those authorities and standardize them at the state level. Proponents of the bill say that it will get rid of a confusing patchwork and will spur development and will not hinder it. Opponents of the bill say that this is just a power grab by the state and the state that is friendly right now to business, and therefore local control is going out the window. The number to call in with a question or comment is 800-228-5615. And we've got two callers on the line. Let's start with one right now. We'll go to Mary in Eau Claire. Mary, thanks so much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to tell you the people and talk to some of the industry representatives and speak to the specific example groundwater control and the wells. And the gentleman who said, you know, more than one well was ridiculous. Well, I know of sites where, you know, wells have been put next to old city dumps, for example. And in some places, there's so much water pumped out of the ground, and then there's high-cap ag wells that it changes the flow of the groundwater. And the representative from Fairmount Minerals should be familiar with the case because of one of their subsidiaries. Their mine in Wedron, Illinois, has reversed the flow of the groundwater and is in the mix of possible causes of having benzene in the drinking water there.
All right, Mary, gotcha. excuse me. Rich Buttinger, what about the, you know, we heard earlier Eric Bott mentioned that the town's, in some cases, they've expected monitoring wells that are more than, I guess, what the state would require. Any thoughts on that? And any thoughts on Mary's comments?
Yeah, well, you know, as far as the, you know, and we understand, I mean, you know, being a responsible mine operator myself, we understand the importance of site-specific needs and concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Those needs and concerns issues that pop up can be handled through local zoning, whether that's monitoring wells or, you know, water quality testing, whatever it may be, can be applied through zoning code, zoning authority. You know, as far as the regulations for air and water, you know, the U.S. EPA has delegated the regulatory authority for the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. They are the regulatory authority within Wisconsin. So when it comes to any kind of regulations for air and water, surface water, groundwater, through the U.S. Regulations, those are handled through the DNR. Now, from a local standpoint, whether it's the need for monitoring wells, I think the true issue is, you know, the interaction between a company or an industry and the local government. The question is, you know, why? What's the science? What's the fact behind that? Regardless of whether DNR requires it. And if it's adopted through zoning authority, that would be the appropriate regulatory agency for that topic and many other topics that have been discussed as well. If you look at some of the zoning codes, some of them within counties and townships are very lengthy. Some of them are fairly simple that go back to the state authority. It just depends on, you know, the zoning authority and that land use, and the local government is the best surveyor for that certain property and the needs and the impacts. But the industry, all industries, you know, not just non-metallic mining, you know, require fact and science to be based on these on regulations be based on fact and science, and not just you know, like you said, the political patchwork that could be influencing some of these. You know, that's kind of what we're seeing, and you know, we're just in need of certainty, and I think the Senate bill achieves that.
Let me follow up. There have been a lot of agreements between industrial sand companies, and I'm sure other industries as well, and local towns. One of them that we hear a lot about is the Town of Howard Agreement. That sets all kinds of things, you know, road use agreements. There's some monitoring stuff included in that. It's basically a developer's agreement. If the state takes over and takes some of these authorities away, will there be any incentive? Will there be any carrot for companies, industrial sand companies or others, to make these deals?
Well, you know, these deals, I mean, there's, you know, you may call the deals a you know, relationship also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association and our member companies and their local governments have very strong relationships. And some of them do indeed have developers agreements and those sorts of collaborations within their local governments. And, you know, we feel very strongly and very positively that will continue to benefit not only the operations but also the local communities and the local governments. So that will continue, and there's always that interaction. You know, depending on you know, the company and the local government, you know, some companies have been in place for over 100 years. There's very long-standing agreements. You know, and give an example: participation at a Summerfest. You know, mm-hmm. there's always that kind of agreement, that commitment to positively impacting local communities. When it comes to zoning authority, you know, we feel that needs to be handled by the zoning authority when it comes to specific regulations for land use.
And Rick Suttleman, I wish we had more time, but let me ask you this. You've mentioned that you had some concerns that this bill, if it passes as is, won't give towns a way to get companies to the table. Could you explain that real quick?
Well, again, if the preemption is on licensing ordinance, the towns without zoning would not have any authority to require certain impacts as site-specific, and those towns that are under county zoning would have to rely on the counties, and not all the counties have the same interest. I want to indicate that Rich's association has the biggest companies and long-standing companies, and they've been up front, and they have most of the agreements. There's a lot of, though, new and developing companies. I don't want to characterize them as all being fly-by-night, but that's a real concern, that we need to make sure we protect the local communities from all potential impacts from companies. And, again, the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association has the largest companies. And they've been practicing good neighbor practices. I give them credit. But whereas other companies that don't necessarily follow the same procedures, and without having some authority to get them to the table, we feel we're going to lose some local control and protection of the community.
All right. And with that, unfortunately, we are out of time. But thank you, gentlemen, for your conversation this hour. We were joined by Eric Bott. He's the Environmental Policy Director for the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Also joined by Rick Stottleman, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Towns Association, and Rich Buttinger, President of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Thank you all very much. Also, big thanks to Team Westside. You know who you are. You know what you do. I appreciate it. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about a new attempt to get after a local skills gap in the Chippewa Valley. Until then, have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.